Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is Grammy Award-winning vocalist and songwriter Melissa Manchester. She performed with Bette Midler as the Toots in the Middle in the original Harlettes. She co-wrote and produced a number of hits throughout the 70s, and in 1980 became the first singer to have two movie themes nominated for Academy Awards in the same year. Her Grammy-winning hit, You Should Hear How She Talks About You, followed in 1982. Her songs have been recorded by artists including Barbara Streisand, Alison Krauss, and Johnny Mathis. And she's gone on to make a career on the stage with roles in Sweeney Todd and Song and Dance, among others. Melissa Manchester, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you, my friend. How are you?
I am great.
Good.
And all the better for speaking to you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate this time with you because you have, to me, what is an extraordinary career, because you've been able to examine and perform all different kinds of music. It seems to me that you have never, ever, musically speaking, limited yourself.
That's true. I believe I'm part of what I call the bridge generation. When I started writing in the 70s, we had still been affected, deeply affected and informed by American popular music that still came off of the stages of Broadway. There was real shape and form, what I consider melody-driven songs as opposed to rhythm-driven songs, which is the aesthetic of today's popular song. And because of that, I simply know what a melody sounds like, and I know, because of Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and Gershwin and those men that created that gold standard in the first volume of the American Songbook, I have a sense, at least, of the emotional unfoldment of melody and a lyric. And so I'm really glad I was given that gift by my parents of having such beautiful music playing in the house all the time.
Your father was a professional musician.
He was a bassoonist with the Metropolitan Opera for 30 years.
So you grew up with exposure to all different kinds of music. This is in Manhattan, I presume?
The Bronx and Manhattan, yes. There was a lot of classical music because Pop was always rehearsing, practicing. There was some Latin music. There was a lot of jazz music, not too much rock and roll, but a lot of Broadway musical music because that was the popular music of the day.
And where did these heavy influences with soul and blues come from?
Well, I suppose Aretha Franklin a lot, the incredible records that came out of Atlantic Records, the great history that they had with the women soul singers. And then when I was becoming a writer, I was a teenager then, and I heard Laura Nyro, and Laura Nyro was my muse for a long time because there was nobody who had ever captured a woman's point of view and in real shafts of brilliance would articulate a very core essence. When I auditioned for Paul Simon, because I studied songwriting with him at NYU for 6 months, and he asked everybody to audition, and I played him a couple of songs, and he said, play me another, and I played him another. He said, play me one more. I played him one more. He said, have you been listening to Laura Nyro? I said, oh, all the time, every day, day and night. He said, it's time to stop now. And so I did, and I studied with him, and he gave me words of wisdom that I carry to this day.
Your first hit, your first hit record, Midnight Blue, is a song that you co-wrote with Carol Bayer-Sager.
Right.
Where did that come from?
They all came from conversations. What's new? How are you? And that's why what I think Carol's extreme talent is that she's able to capture a conversational tone immediately in the lyric and therefore immediately pulls the listener in. And it was remarkable to do the heavy lifting of touring America back and forth to help push that song up the charts. And it was extraordinary the first time I played the opening
introduction,
you know, the intro, the whatever, and I started to play da 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 da, da and I think we were in New Orleans, and the place erupted, and it was wow,
what a moment!
Yes, it was amazing, and it's been very touching how that song has meant so much. That's always the unexpected gift, is, you know, you're facing a white piece of paper, and when the song actually makes its way into the cosmic wallpaper, and what you get back from people and how what they find in your music is so touching.
Would you sing it for us now?
Sure, be happy to.
Whatever it is, it'll keep till the morning. Haven't we both got better things to do? Midnight blue. Even the simple things become rough. Haven't we had enough? And I think we can make it one more time if we try. If we try one more time for all the old times. All of the times you told me you need me, needing me now is something I could use. Midnight blue. You give your hand to a friend. Maybe it's not the end, and I think we can make it one more time if we try. If we try one more time. Think we can make it. Oh, wouldn't you give your heart to a friend? Think of me as your friend, and I think we can make it one more time if we try. If we try one more time for all old times, and I think we can make it, yes, one more time if we try. If we try one more time for all of the old times. More time. I think we can make it if we try. I think we can make it if we try. Looks like we're gonna make it, yes. Looks like we're gonna make it.
Midnight Blue, performed and co-written by our guest Melissa Manchester, created with Carol Bayer Sager.
Mm-hmm.
You started your career as a live performer,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to me that your early recordings have the immediacy of a live performance.
Mm-hmm.
And did you love the recording process at first, or How did the recording process affect that aesthetic?
Well, I thought that the recording process would simply be an extension of what I do on stage, just like I thought in the early days that what I did on stage would just be an extension of what I did in my mother's living room. And those first two albums on Bell Records, Home to Myself and Bright Eyes, they were entirely live. Entirely live. We were making up noises using vacuum hoses, you know, because that's what you did. That's how you would make up noises. There were no electronics to speak of. But you would play, and somebody would play, and it all happened in the moment. It was very touching.
Come In from the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Who was that written for?
Well, I wrote that with Carol Sager, and that was another example of a song coming out of our conversations. We were both young women who were married at the time, and we were using the vehicle of the song to examine our lives. And so we would talk and talk and talk and talk, and out of the talk, I'd sit at the piano, she'd sit right next to me, and at some point I'd start to hear it. The muse would just show up. I'd start to hear the music coming out of our conversations. And she sat with a big legal pad and pen, and the language of the song language, the lyrical language, the melodic language fell out of our conversations. And that's why there's a certain seamlessness to those songs. And that's why it's so touching that they mean so much to people. Because they came out of a very tiny moment of a conversation. And that's when an audience reflects back that your songs mean so much, help them to decide not to commit suicide while listening to music, decide to make a baby while listening to music, help them get through an army stint overseas or a jail term or whatever it is, or college angst. It's that unexpected gift. And so that's that world.
Would you sing Come In from the Rain?
I'd be happy to.
Well, hello there, good old friend of mine. You've been reaching for yourself for such a long time. There's so much to say, no need to explain. Just an open door for you to come in from the rain. It's a long road when you're all alone, and someone like you will always choose the long way home. There's no right or wrong, I'm not here. I just want to be the one to keep you from the rain, from the rain. And it looks like sunny skies. Now that I know you're all right, time has left us older and wiser. I know I am. And I think of us like an old cliche, but it doesn't matter, 'cause I love you anyway. Coming from the rain. And it looks like sunny skies. Now that I know you're all right, more than all right, time
A gorgeous song sung by our gorgeous guest, Melissa Manchester. That song means a great deal to me, as you have talked about these songs meaning so much to people. It takes me back to the first time I heard the song and performing it so many times in my piano bar days and then still singing it occasionally where I, just in the middle of a concert, I have a solo spot and I will sing it because it is that part that all of us are trying to find in ourselves.
Exactly.
What do you like about your life now? And what do you like about your music now that might have changed?
That's such an interesting question. There's a lot I like about my life because I have a sense of what really lands at my feet and what is my business to take care of. And in terms of music and in terms of this album, You Gotta Love the Life, my 20th, I'm an adjunct professor at USC at the Thornton School, and I teach at the Baby School, the popular music division. And my students would come in every 5 or 6 months with a CD with shrink wrap and lovely photographs and credits and 5 or 6 songs, and I asked them how they were doing that, how could they accomplish that, and I thought they were going to tell me about an independent record company or something. And they said, well, we did it through crowdfunding, through fan funding, and you should do that. And I said, great, what's that? And they explained it to me. And last August, we started a campaign and got the funds to record this album. And I wanted to return, because it was the 20th, I wanted to complete that circle of bringing musicians in and really making music where these great musicians really bring it to help you find the inner life of these original songs. So we did it this new way, new for me, and it's just been extraordinary. And, you know, because we recorded it down at Citrus College, which is a teaching college, this amazing studio, which rivals Capitol Records, to me anyway, there were students coming through to watch live musicians make music.
And that must have been something that inspired you even more.
It was, this whole experience was a breathing and living journey all the way through. And all of the musicians knew that they were part of something special. And they kept saying yes. I had $12 to pay everybody. And it was just fantastic.
And you have Al Jarreau on the CD and Stevie Wonder.
Guest stars.
And Dionne Warwick.
Oh, they all said yes. Dave Koz and Joe Sample. And it was, you know, Al Jarreau did a duet with me. And at the end, he just started crying. He said, it's so amazing. You're doing this. Keep doing this. And for Dionne Warwick, you know, I'd first seen her when I was 15 years old at the Copa. And I'd sent her a MASH note, you know, she was one of my idols, and she sent me a letter back right away on her lavender stationery, so encouraging. And
oh my gosh.
And it was unbelievable, you know, and Keb Moe, my beautiful dear friend, it was just, it was extraordinary. People just want to be part of the real deal. It's lovely.
That track, I love the feel of it. It really is evocative mm-hmm. of juke joints and yep. that whole experience. And now I understand mm-hmm. you are recreating that moment.
Right.
So that guy gave you a gift.
He did indeed. That's exactly right.
On your newest recording, You Gotta Love the Life, you chose to do a very drastic and wonderful reimagining of a song that was originally a hit for the Ronettes. Mm-hmm. Would you explain how that came to be?
Well, first of all, Be My Baby, this, I did not realize that this is the 50th anniversary of Be My Baby, of that record by the Ronettes.
Ah.
And it's such a, it's, you know, what we refer to as a standalone song. It does, it's so solid as a composition that it could be treated, arranged any number of ways. And I always found something so poignant about the hope that is suggested, that suggestion of a promise. And one of the things I've always loved to do is to find the inner life in a song. I did that with Walk On By years ago. I like to slow the songs down so the inner life can unfold and reveal itself. And as soon as I started working on this on the stage, because the stage is where I work on all of this stuff, and as soon as I slowed Be My Baby down, the audience, there was an incredible hush, and everybody started to sing those incredible background parts of the chorus. And there's a tenderness that showed up, and a sweetness, and Stefan Oberhoff and I came up with that arrangement, and I think it's precious to share that with the audience. It makes it new again.
Melissa, your time studying with Paul Simon, that songwriting class, is so fascinating to me. Is it true that he predicted the state of music today and that it would be more about rhythm and less about other aspects?
He did. He wrote an article in a Sunday magazine section of the New York Times maybe 15 years ago, where he said that as songs progressed, the songs would be rhythm-driven as opposed to melody-driven. He did indeed.
You're a great singer of classic songs, of standards, from pop and your own great songs. And
aren't we lucky that we love those songs, that we grew up with them?
Yes.
That we insist on sharing them. I assign those songs to my students because those songs were melody-driven as opposed to rhythm-driven. It blows their minds. They cannot figure out how these guys wrote those songs. How did you pack so much into a tiny little song? Kills them.
On your newest CD, mm-hmm. You Gotta Love the Life, mm-hmm. you did include some standards. And
yep.
I'd like to play one of the tracks that is a combination of Irving Berlin and Cole Porter.
Exactly.
Two guys who wrote both music and lyrics.
Exactly. I love those songs in particular because they were written in times similar to these. And the genius of these songwriters is that they allowed the listener to hold on to our dreams and our dignity regardless of what the world looked like.
I'd like to go back to a moment in our shared history, 1985, when Liza Minnelli introduced me to the world at the Mondrian Hotel, and there was an opening night party, and you actually remember it better than I did because I think I was so nervous about the whole thing.
You were so nervous, and I held your hand in the dark right before you went on, and you were wearing George Gershwin's watch fob and Ira Gershwin's monkey suit.
That's true.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
It was incredible. It was incredible.
Well, for me, one of the most wonderful parts of that evening was after I got through the performances that Liza sang and our friend Marshall Behrer sang, and then you sang. You sang Coming from the Rain, and you sang a song that I think you had recently written.
That's correct.
And I've never forgotten that song because it's a delightful idea and it's a delightful song. I'd like to ask you to sing it if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled that you remember it.
Would you set it up?
Absolutely. The name of the song is called Elevator Music. And, you know, when I was first starting, songwriters would joke about, oh, what happens if you hear your music on Muzak? And I thought, what a delightful idea. I hope it happens. And it just seemed to frame itself in a way where, gosh, it's really a good thing. Elevator music is just about as good as it gets in a romance. So here we go.
Every once in a while, the world looks just fine. The air is clean, the sky is blue. I like me and you like you. That's when the world fills with elevator music. Every once in a while. Every once in a while, it all comes out right. The bills are paid, we're in the black. We even made some money back. That's when the world fills with elevator music. Every once in a while. While the world keeps on spinning around. From penthouse to basement, and to our amazement, we get through all life's ups and downs. Every once in a while, contented am I. The perfect life we'll never know, but we stopped looking long ago. That's why the world fills with elevator music. Every once in a while, every once, every once in.
That's the kind of song that makes you go, ah, at the end. Elevator music. The humorist Stan Freberg told me a story about being at Capitol Records with Johnny Mercer. They were in an elevator at Capitol Records, which was started by the great Johnny Mercer.
Right.
And as they're taking this brief ride in the elevator car, there is elevator music playing
sure.
in the car. And Freberg turns to Mercer and jokingly says, "Did you write that?" And Johnny listened with a furrowed brow. He said, "Yes."
Gosh, can you imagine?
He wrote everything.
Oh, he did. He did. Gosh.
I'm partial to a number of classic songwriters, and one team that I keep going back to is Rodgers and Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, at your father's birthday party, I accompanied you singing a Rodgers and Hart song.
It was the most beautiful night. It was my father's 65th birthday. You stayed at, well, nobody could believe you because you knew every refrain, every verse, every lost anecdote. When the evening was over, you stayed until, I don't know, maybe 4 a.m, regaling me with stories. You wouldn't take the money that I promised to pay you for it. It's just great, and we knew that we made a new friend.
Well, I was having too much fun. I couldn't possibly take money for the whole experience of being with you and your family and your dad with these amazing stories and your mom's warmth. But I remember playing and you singing this somewhat obscure Rodgers and Hart song.
Yes, absolutely.
Can we do it now?
Absolutely. I'm excited.
This is me at the piano with Melissa singing Rodgers and Hart, "I'll Tell the Man in the Street."
I won't tell of my love to the red, red rose, or the babbling brook where the sweet magnolia grows. I won't tell of my love to every little stone or the whippoorwill
and everyone I meet that you and I are sweethearts. I'll shout it out from the roof. I'll give the papers proof that we two are complete hearts. I want the world to know. I'll use the radio. And when I've said all my say, you may be old and gray, but you won't get away from me.
Thank you for that, Melissa.
Thank you, my dear.
When you sing a classic song, do you ever look at it and say, I would have changed this or I would have changed that? Or do you find things from this standpoint that you would change? It's like I noticed that you very judiciously can change or bend a melody here and there. And these songs go through their own lives in that sometimes they are fundamentally changed from what the music reflects. Do you ever, such an experienced songwriter, do you ever say, gee, I wish they'd done a little better with that?
Well, you know, when your emotion is using your voice and the song as the vehicle, your emotion is doing the bending. Your emotion is finding that space, that higher note, that scooped phrase to capture, again, that inner life. That inner life shows up.
Mm.
You know, the composers, the lyricists and composers wrote the ink, and they wrote the exquisite roadmaps.
That's the word I use for them.
Yeah.
Roadmap.
Yeah. But in singing, you're finding the space and what to do with it.
Mm.
And because they're so magnificent, all standalone songs, all these songs that we treasure, they keep showing, they keep making room for even more and more possibilities. There's no end to the way you can sing these songs, I don't believe.
Hmm.
But the actual ink of it, the actual composition of it, is so rock solid, that's what makes it the treasure.
I have to agree with you. It's the malleability of the songs. They are a blueprint, as you say, but then they become living, breathing things when an artist takes it and makes
and
it.
And it's a mystery. You know, sometimes I will just simply put my hands on the piano and play the chords to Climb Every Mountain. It is extraordinary how little room it takes up on the keyboard. It's so compact. And you hear it the very first time. Every once in a while, I will do that just to remind myself what I want it to be like. You know, because the reality is you have to assume people will hear it once. you're lucky if they want to hear it again.
Well, the great arranger, who was a dear friend of yours, Peter Matz, had a sign in his studio that said, "Simple is good."
Right.
Yet you have created a standard that is far from simple in its construction. Whenever I call you friend.
Yes. He wrote every key we could find.
That's with Kenny Loggins.
With Kenny Loggins, yes.
Well, that, I mean, the song, it is absolutely unlike any other song I've ever heard form-wise. Mm-hmm. How did you evolve that song? Do you remember?
Oh, it was a while ago. The song was in different pieces, and Kenny had a certain sense of what he wanted it to be, but the shape of it was upside down and backwards. And a friend of mine just found a cassette of our writing session. And he said, "Do you realize how much had input into the song?" And I didn't recall. But Kenny and I kept running into each other. That's how we got together. We kept running into each other at these award shows. We were always co-presenters. And he said, "Can we meet in a room that doesn't have a powder puff in between us?" And I invited him over to my house, and we wrote "Whenever I Call You Friend." But when I presented that finished song to the president of my record company at the time, Clive Davis, he said, "Oh, it's okay." I said, "Are you sure? You sure? Because, you know, remember, Kenny Loggins wrote this with me, and you know, Kenny's—he's a big star. Don't you think that maybe?" "No, nothing, huh?" He said, "No, it's all right." And so Kenny went off and recorded it with Stevie Nicks.
Oh, my gosh.
It's okay.
Well, as a historical palate cleanser, would you sing "Whenever I Call You Friend" for us now?
I'd love to. Really loud.
Yay, here it is. Melissa Manchester singing a song rejected by Clive
there
Davis.
You go.
"Whenever I Call You Friend." Go for it.
"Whenever I call you friend, I begin to think I understand. Anywhere at all, you and I have always been. Forever and ever, I see myself within your eyes. And that's all I need to show me why. Everything I do always brings me home to you. Forever and ever. Such a beautiful sight, the love growing on us every night. I know forever we'll keep doing it right. Whenever I call you friend, I begin to think I understand. Anywhere we go, you and I were meant to be. Forever, whatever. Think about the times to come, though when I ever all of will last. I always wanna call you friend. You're my friend. Sweet love showing us a heavenly light. I never see such a beautiful sight. See love flowing on us every night. I know forever we'll keep doing it. Heavenly light. whenever I call you friend.
Whenever I call you friend, that is a joyous performance, Melissa.
Thank you.
Before we wrap this up, I would love to sing something with you. A song that I've always adored, written by our friends Marvin Hamlisch and Carol Bayer Sager, Through the Eyes of Love. Can we do that one?
I would love it.
All right. Here it is. Yay! My duet with Melissa Manchester, Through the Eyes of Love.
This feeling end, it's everything I am, everything I want to be. I can see what's mine now, finding out what's true, since I found. Looking through the eyes of love. Now I can take the time. I can see my life as it comes up shining. Reaching out to touch you. I can feel so much since I found you. Looking through the eyes of love. And now I do believe that even in a storm we'll find some love. How it feels to touch you.
How I feel so much, so much
since I found you.
I found you, I found you.
Looking through.
I found you looking through these eyes. I found you looking through the eyes, looking through the eyes.